And a very good afternoon again, folks. Getting windy out there, getting wet, and the old short evenings are with us and that. You're very welcome anyway to Kildare Focus. We'll try and brighten your afternoon, myself and Hannah Kelly, between now and 3 o'clock this afternoon. On the programme, what have we got for you? Well, we've got the Medical Council President, Dr. Suzanne Crowe, on standby because news that 1 in 4 people have not visited their GP. Medical Council research reveals. On associated notes, we'll update the INMO's latest trolley watch today. And also in breaking news, a story just coming out of various media is that elderly patients taking up hospital beds are to be moved to the next available nursing home to ease winter trolley crisis. Won't have any choice now but saying, I'm not going, I'm staying. Also, do you have a healthy relationship with your phone? No, that's not you're talking to yourself all the time or anything else. But do you constantly check your phone? Do you begin to have withdrawal symptoms if you happen to leave your phone at home? And wonder, what does this say psychologically about us? And is it maybe the only obsessive-compulsive disorder we might have? Well, we'll hear from Professor of Psychiatry at Trinity College Dublin, Professor Brendan Kelly, who has regularly contributed to us here on KFM about all of that. So get ready for the news. Also, what else have we got for you today? Well, the good news, because prices for electricity provision are going down. Energy suppliers are set to cut electricity and gas charges substantially from today. We'll have the good news for you later in the programme. And we'll hear about two local events. Kildare CMWS is hosting a CPR and first aid course on the evening of 13th and 15th of this month. And Paddy O'Byrne, that's Jim Brady telling us about that, and Paddy O'Byrne will host a free creative writing class at Rathangan Community Library. All of that between now and 3, and some good music songs as well, even though I say so myself. And if you'd like to get in touch, the usual numbers, text or WhatsApp us 0833 97 97 97, or email studio@kfmradio.com. Okay, that's the menu we have for you then. So, 94% of adults are registered with the GP, Clem included, I have to say. 25% report not having visited the GP in the past year. Well, I have, but I suppose only once, compared to 15% in 2020. 1 in 4 people not visiting their GP for the past year. So the Medical Council research reveals, and to tell us more is the Council's President, Dr. Suzanne Crowe. Suzanne, you're very welcome to this afternoon's Kildare Focus programme, and thanks indeed for joining us.
Thanks very much, Glenn. It's great to speak to you on this particular topic. Well, we are a little bit worried about this change in patients attending their doctors, and are somewhat curious, I suppose, about the reasons ourselves.
Yeah, but there will be various reasons that people will say, I can't get an appointment with my GP if you ring up. And I caused untold laughter in my local GP the other day when I said, listen, I have a little problem with a small little rash I picked up on holidays, and can I see my doctor in the next 5 minutes? Sure, everybody fell off their seats and everything else and said, well, let's tell you what, hang on there, we might be able to get to you this month. But on a more serious note, Suzanne, it is one of the difficulties, isn't it? And that, of course, is more complex than just doctors being overcrowded. It's all to do with resources, etc.
It is, it is. I mean, we've had a big expansion in our population in this country, and we have people living longer and better, which is wonderful. But all of those people would like to see their doctor on a regular basis. And access to GPs has become more difficult. We have had a lot of doctors retiring in the last couple of years, and there will be more retirements over the next few years. And so understanding how that's impacting on patients and how they can get to see their doctor is really important. I know the College of GPs is putting a lot of attention into encouraging doctors to consider training in GP, and they're also supporting doctors to come into this country from other countries like South Africa and to work, especially in rural communities, as GPs. So I think patients are waiting longer to be seen, and that is of worry. But the other reason is when you're waiting, patients are looking at other resources online. So they're looking up their conditions, their symptoms and various treatments, and they're either looking to social media or telemedicine to support their care.
Now, I have to say, I'm not a member of the medical fraternity, but I think that's a crazy thing to do, that you should ever rely on online on what is wrong with you and what I should do about it. The risks in that are really inherent. And anyway, on a most fundamental level, Suzanne, I find if I go online to have a look and say, I have a couple of a bit of a rash there, I come away from it feeling I'm going to die in the next 5 minutes possibly because I'm suffering from multiple conditions.
No, you're absolutely right. It's a blizzard of information out there, and it's very nice to have a doctor to guide you through that and to give them their experience and to work in partnership with you as a patient to work out what's the next best steps for you, because each person is completely individual and comes from a different place. But at the same time, telemedicine can support medical care. It can be really useful for smaller hospitals to share images and information with bigger hospitals to access more speciality opinions, or lots of surgeons are using it now for follow-up visits. So you don't have to go back up to the hospital. You can send them a photograph of your surgical wound and show them how it's healing up. So I think there is definitely a role for telemedicine, as long as there's safety nets in place so that the patients where it's not suitable to be looked after on telemedicine, that we're catching those patients.
And your research reveals that the use of telemedicine services has significantly increased, with nearly a quarter of adults accessing these, including 21% who have used GP services through telemedicine, and a marked increase from 2% in 2020. Indeed, it is significant. And that 9% have used social media to seek guidance from a doctor who uses their social media platform. And that's very responsible. The kind of thing about getting online is where you randomly go on, I have a red patch on my elbow, what's wrong with me? And you're told you need to have it amputated in the next 5 minutes, and you go away all concerned and stuff like that. But there is another aspect to this, Suzanne, I'm sure of which you're familiar. We in Ireland tend to be reactive rather than proactive in terms of our health care, i.e. we'll only go to the doctor when there's something wrong, maybe rather than doing a maintenance check maybe twice a year.
Oh, no, that's very true. And we would really like to be able to move to a healthcare care culture where patients were really using their own autonomy, really engaged in their own care and taking a very active interest, going to see the doctor very early on to discuss how to stay well. I suppose at the moment, because our system has been short of resources for quite a few years now at this stage, it's very difficult to lift ourselves out of crisis management, as it were, and always focusing on the acute, the very sick situation. And I think moving away from the acute hospital model and out into the community where lower intensity medical services can be delivered is the way to go. And that model is out there. Lots of other countries, like the Netherlands, that's the way they deliver their healthcare.
Now, the Guide to Professional Conduct and Ethics for Registered Medical Practitioners, and by the way, your research also reveals that doctors rank second after teachers as the most trusted profession in Irish society, with 89% trusting their doctor to tell the truth. So not surprising there. Regarding this Guide for Professional Conduct and Ethics for Registered Medical General Medical Procedures, it contains new and revised guidance for doctors on various areas. Give us a flavour of what you're talking about there.
So we make this guide, we produce this guide with a lot of public consultation about every 5 years, and then we revise it. And that's what we've done now. We've just launched it today, this new iteration. And we've a very positive tone in it. It's all about modelling it's a good role model of what good professional practice looks like, so that the doctor can read this guide and the patient can read the guide. The language is very straightforward in it. There's no real medical terminology, and it's just about protecting and acknowledging the need for respect and dignity for the patient and listening to people's views. So it's very basic principles-based guidance for doctors.
Indeed, I was just about to refer to that particular point of guiding values and principles in managing situations with patients, covering honesty, integrity, putting patients first, treating patients with dignity and respect. I think it's excellent research altogether and will reflect many of the trustworthiness that we all exercise in our individual medical practitioners. Before you go, Suzanne, would you give me a quick view, because I know the Consultants Association is welcoming it. It's just breaking news in the last hour or so that elderly patients taking up hospital beds are to be moved to the next available nursing home to ease the winter trolley crisis. The INMO today is saying there's something like 375 trolleys in our hospitals. There's 7 at Nace General in corridors, 6 more in wards, 13 in all. But I suppose you as a GP and others as GPs often find trying to get a patient at the hospital, beds are locked off because of what has been up to now, what's rather crudely described as bed blockers, patients who don't want to go home.
Well, that term is absolutely horrible, and it's so disrespectful to ever refer to anybody, a human with a family, in that way. I think I would personally would have lots of concerns around picking on any individual patient group. There's no individual patient group is responsible for the lack of beds and capacity in our healthcare system. There's been numerous OECD reports that have highlighted that we need more hospital beds, and the Department of Health and the HSE are aware of that. And the inevitable overcrowding that we experience each year, not just winter, but also summer, is not down to the care of any one individual patient.
All right. On that note, thank you indeed. We're going to discuss that more in detail now with our own Hannah Kelly here in Studio 2. But meanwhile, that's Dr. Suzanne Crowe, who's Medical Council President, on that research that we've been discussing over the last 10 minutes or thereabouts. Suzanne, lovely talking to you. Thanks very much indeed. And I'm sure we'll talk again sometime in the future.
Take great care. Thanks a lot, Ken.
You're more than welcome. Okay. Now, still to come on the programme, we have a lot more for you, including do you have a healthy relationship with your phone and so forth. But first of all, I want to just call in Hannah, who's the good producer of this programme as well. And Hannah, elderly patients taking up hospital beds are to be moved to the next available nursing home to ease the winter trolley crisis. Now, that's a very interesting point Suzanne's after making, because she says no particular group should be selected. So why that we're only picking elderly patients as distinct from maybe younger patients who might not want to go home or be refusing to go home? But anyway, let's stay with the breaking story that older patients who are fit for discharge but are still occupying scarce hospital beds will no longer be able to remain there until a place in a nursing home of their choice becomes available, Hannah.
Yeah, so they'll be asked to move out of hospital to another nursing home temporarily where a place has become vacant even though it is further away. And this decision is part of a new drive to reduce hospital overcrowding and free up beds to alleviate the trolley crisis that's going on.
And the circular from the HSE Chief Bernard Gloucester, who's and the Chief Medical Officer Dr. Colm Henry at the HSE, he's a geriatrician himself treating older people, to action the new policy, has been sent to hospital managers across the country. We're only finding out about this now. Give us some of the details.
Yeah, so there are around 500 beds occupied at any one time by patients known as delayed discharges who no longer have to be there but need step-down care in many cases, as many cases a place in a nursing home. So at the same time, hospitals may be struggling with over 500 patients on trolleys waiting for a bed. So then it will apply to patients who are approved for the Fair Deal scheme and also those who need nursing home care temporarily while a more long-term health plan is agreed. So they will still be able to apply to move to the nursing home of their choice when a place becomes vacant.
Right, at 575 on trolleys today, by the way, in beds. But I'm really taken by that point now that this is going to be aimed particularly at older people. Being told, you're going to a nursing home down the road.
it could be 20 miles away or whatever else. Tough luck, but we want this bed. A circular from the we talked about that circular. What else did he say? Because they also sent a circular to hospitals.
Yeah, so he said that there's no doubt that in some of our hospital settings, including but not exclusively in larger hospitals on the south side of Dublin, there are long-term care beds available, but there are also delayed transfers of care for patients approved through NHSS, the Fair Deal process for long-term care. And he goes on to say, it's regularly the case that there may be patients approved for long-term care on the south side of Dublin, and the only availability is on the north side, and similar happens in other regions of the country. So at all times, the HSE wants to respect patient and public choice and self-determination, as would be reasonable in any care context. However, it is recognised to be the case that what is available may have to be accepted while a patient's choice
okay.
is awaited.
Now, we know that Southside Dubs and Northside Dubs allegedly never mix in regards to that. Anyway, he continued by saying, we want to work compassionately with patients. The decision, I wonder what reaction there's been to it. We've heard the Medical Council President, Dr. Suzanne Crow, tell us there that her concern would be that one particular age group should not be targeted. But the decision has been welcomed by the body representing hospital emergency consultants, which is the Irish Association for Emergency Medicine. They said it will improve bed availability. What else did they say?
So they also said that often these are older adults who cannot safely be discharged directly to their own home, and problems can arise when the long-term care facility preferred by the patient or the family of the patient is not immediately available. Mr. Gloucester and Dr. Henry emphasised that at all times the HSE wants to respect patient and public choice and self-determination. However, they do state what is available may have to be accepted while a patient's choice is awaited. So it's also unconscionable
unconscionable will do. Yeah.
That a patient who needs an inpatient bed for acute treatment is unable to go to one because the bed in the acute hospital is being used for a patient who could have had their care needs met elsewhere.
Okay. Now, we know, of course, that the concern is that there are many beds being occupied across the country by patients who, for a wide variety of reasons, basically, essentially, often nowhere to go, or nowhere, if they go home, no one to take care of them, because we know how hard it is to get provide hours. But now they're going to be shunted off to nursing homes. And the key commentary about this over the next couple of hours and throughout the day, I imagine, will broaden into why only the elderly? Why not anybody who is deemed to be sufficiently recovered from whatever ailment put them into the hospital that they be given a choice? You have to go home, or we can get you a bed in a nursing home temporarily, regardless of your age. Because many nursing homes are pretty, you know, good, comfortable places now, and with very high standards as well, rather than having the bed blocked where many people are trying to get in. Should be interesting. Hannah, thanks for that, and we'll talk to you again later in the programme.
Kildare Focus with Clem Ryan. Text or WhatsApp on 0833 97 97 97.
And now, do you agree with those new measures that have been proposed, that anybody who's fit to go home should be told, you're going home? But it only seems to be targeted at older people. I think it's going to be very controversial, and they'll have it on Kildare Today tomorrow morning, as I just said with Owen. But if you, what's your own opinion of it? If you'd like to give us a view on it, 0833 97 97 97. Should it happen in the first place? Should it only be targeted at the older people, or should it be anybody? Or should it just be a case of, once you're told you're ready to go home, you're going, whether, you know, you like it or not? As inhuman as that sounds, but given the shortage of beds and difficulties of people getting into hospital, I wonder how you might react to that. So you can text or WhatsApp your opinion on that on 0833 97 97 97. And we'll have a bit more music for you as well. And Hannah, are we having any luck there in terms of our next item? You might let me know. Oh, indeed we have, I think. Sorry, apologies about that. So, are you filled with terror at being at the prospect that you might be left without your phone? If so, you're not alone, because Clem might ascribe to being that as well. Do you have a healthy relationship with your phone, I wonder? And indeed, what is all about this? Because a new poll in the UK has found that 42% of adults identify with nomophobia, the fear of being stuck without mobile phone connectivity, or maybe even without your mobile phone. Professor Brendan Kelly has contributed to our various programmes regularly over the last couple of years. He's Professor of Psychiatry at Trinity College in Dublin, and he joins me again. Good morning, Brendan. Or good afternoon, Brendan.
Good afternoon, Clem. How are you?
And you, I'd say, good morning. So, healthy relationship with a phone. I'd say I don't have one anyway, because I tend to be stuck to it, and if I leave home without it, I nearly feel that I've lost use of an arm or something. And I suspect I'm not alone in this smartphone world.
No, not at all. I mean, they have invented a new term, nomophobia, which is the worry about being away from your phone or not being connected, you know, with your phone. And look, I'm not certain it deserves to be called a phobia or an illness or a condition. We don't want to over-medicalize things. But I think a lot of us have fairly unhealthy relationships with the phone. We're a bit obsessed with watching it and being near it and so forth. And it's a bit like, I suppose, being dependent on anything and bordering on an addiction in some people, although we do spot this in other people rather than ourselves more often than not.
I think that's a very pertinent point, because I certainly all the time look around me. If you sit on any form of public transport, or if you watch any form of public transport go by, the art of conversation seems to be practically gone, because it's, you know, practically universally heads down on our phone. It's nearly an automatic response now that once someone sits in a particular setting, even having a cup of coffee or a pint or whatever, out comes the phone, click, 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 checking.
Yes, and I mean, there's a number of aspects to it. There is, I suppose, the psychological aspect of it, that we do like to be connected, and phones and getting messages on them, they're very sensory. It usually makes a noise. It's quite a bright light on the phone, and there's a little social buzz when you get a message or when you see something of interest. But as well as the psychological part, there's also, as you say, the behavioural part. And you know, when you talk to people who are stopping smoking cigarettes, one of the things they say is, I don't know what to do with my hands. I don't know, you know, where to put my hands or what to do. And I think we've got now the same with the phones, that it's a very much a behavioural thing. And, you know, we can look up on the bus and see everyone else on their phone and think that's dreadful. But then we look down at our own phone again and we simply carry on.
I'm wondering myself if I've got an issue, because I've developed an awful habit of the television is on, out comes the phone in the hand, I'm scrolling and watching, unless something is particularly engaging on television, and I have to say probably that's more of the problem than anything. The lack of engaging content on television these days, with far too much reality content and all of that. But I end up, you know, ostensibly watching the television, but going through the phone. Some of it is work-related, but some of it is just general scroll after scroll after scroll. That's kind of obsessive, isn't it?
Yes, no, it is. The behaviour becomes obsessive very quickly. But, you know, there are simple things that we can do in our more enlightened moments to try and reduce the amount of time we spend on the phone doing pointless activities. I'm sure some of what you're describing there, Clem, is fairly pointless. And oddly, you probably know it at the time.
I do. So,
indeed. So, and yes, you go ahead. We're very irrational, really, aren't we? But we can take some steps. Like, for example, one of the things that people sometimes do is they change their screen setting to black and white. And that makes the phone less attractive. And people who do that tend to spend less time on the screen. Now, of course, you can just change it back. But we tend not to. Or the other thing is to put a bit of physical distance between you and the phone, particularly at nighttime. Phones don't belong in bedrooms. So leaving it downstairs is a very good step. Turning it off downstairs is another step. And then if you're very dedicated, turning it off and putting it in the boot of the car overnight is a real statement that you are in control, not your phone.
Yeah, because I think that the generality of what we're speaking about, and I know generalising is not the desirable way to go, but I'd say there are very few people listening to us now who, if they walk out of a room, the first thing that occurs to them is, where's my phone? And they'll go back and get it, even though they might be going all of 10 metres from one room to another. This is a very widespread modern phenomenon, is it not? And how generally it's going to impact us, I know this is a very, very huge question now, in terms of interpersonal relations and communications, Brendan. It's got implications for that, has it not?
It does. It has implications for sort of in real life human relations as opposed to human relations on the phone. You know, on the plus side, Clem, there is some evidence that younger people who have grown up with this technology have a much clearer distinction in their heads between in real life and things on the phone, as compared to, let's say, my generation. I'm 50, and mobile phones arrived, indeed the internet arrived during my lifetime. And there is some evidence that people like me were not adjusting very well. We kind of lost the run of ourselves when these things were new. But that younger people, despite spending a lot of time on their phones, do have a crisper distinction between real life and phone compared to people like me who appear utterly unable to manage the technology at all. But there are lots of other tips that we can do. So, for example, if you turn off your notifications, apparently you'll spend less time on your phone. And the other thing to do is if you set a longer, more complicated passcode for your phone, although that's kind of gone now with facial recognition, but if you go back to a passcode and make it complex, it appears you'll do that less often than you would if you had a simpler passcode or you just use touch recognition. So there are small things we can do to reduce phone time and to reduce the amount of time we worry about it, because there is a secondary problem emerging that people are spending a lot of time on their phone, and when they're not on their phone, they're worried they're spending too much time on their phone. So there's a kind of an echo of the problem there as well.
Well, I said to Hannah yesterday, Hannah, you're 20, I'm not. Brendan, Kelly, you're 50, I'm not. And I certainly am on the wrong side of that. But I would feel that, just to put this particular view to you before we just finish up, that the feeling that I, from my perspective, get about young people nowadays is that the art of physical conversation is gone in favour of, there could be somebody sitting 10 feet away from them and they'll text them rather than speak to them.
It is a different way of communicating, for sure. And I think that we do need to value in-person communication, direct talking to people, looking them in the eye. And as adults, we can do that by modelling it. Young people copy behaviours. They don't necessarily listen to what we say, but they do what we do. And that's important. The other thing to do, of course, is to stand back and to note that the older generation, and let's say that's me at the age of 50, we have always said that the young people were doing things that would somehow distort them or rot their brains. My mother's mother told her that listening to the Beatles was the end of civilization. My mother told me video games would ruin my brain, and look, maybe it did. And now I tell young people that too much time on their phones will rot their brains. History suggests we shouldn't worry too much, but we can take small steps so that the phones are certainly less annoying and don't distort our relationships the way that they sometimes can.
As you've just outlined, it's all about getting the balance right, isn't it?
Yes, it is, and focusing a little bit more on the things that matter. I mean, mobile phones and social media, they do allow people to connect. They allow, you know, people who might have difficulty in direct social situations to reach out in different ways. But it is about getting a balance and valuing in-person communication, which will always trump everything else emotionally and psychologically.
As ever, it's wonderful speaking to you, Brendan, about that. Professor of Psychiatry, Trinity College Dublin, on whether we have a healthy relationship with our phone, and that expert advice as to how we might strike a balance that allows for both. Professor Brendan Kelly, Professor of Psychiatry at Trinity College Dublin. Brendan, thanks a million for talking to us, and a very good morning, a very good afternoon to you indeed.
Thank you.
Kildare Focus with Clem Ryan.
And Hannah Kelly as well, and we'll be speaking with Hannah shortly. She's going to be bringing us up to date on all these reductions we've been told about in our electricity costs and even gas costs, many of which are being announced today, what's to come, and the government's inventions and grants and everything else. But now it's hello to Jim Brady. Jim, good morning. Good afternoon to you. Jeez, I'm going to need the help of a psychiatrist to stop saying good morning. Good afternoon, Jim Brady. Hello, Jim Brady. Is he there? Calling Jim Brady. Are you there now, Jim?
Can you hear me? Yeah, I can hear you now.
I can hear you grand now, Jim.
Good afternoon.
Right, that was just a button that got switched off here, but I'm getting used to how things work around the shop here anyway.
There you go.
And
there you go.
We'll get there eventually. Jim, CMWS stands for what?
Catholic Men's and Women's Association. It was always known as the CYMS.
That's what I said yesterday on the programme.
Correct and right. And in a convention in Athy or in Limerick in 2009, women were incorporated into the society. So it's Catholic Men's and Women's Society.
It used to be the Catholic Young Men's
Society.
The CYMS.
Yeah.
It's now
and,
the CMWs.
And the Catholic aspect of it. Like, there's all faiths and no faiths coming in and out of the building, you know.
I was just to say, Jim Brady, are you keeping out all the Protestants and the pagans?
Not at all. Everybody is welcome, and they are, and they're in there, and there's all walks of life. I mean, between Monday and Sunday, about 450 adults and children would pass through the doors of the hall doing various activities, you know.
450, and this facility is in Kildare Town, of course.
Absolutely. The old CY, as the old name was.
Everyone shortens it to the CY, yeah.
Yeah, no, the law was associated with the CY, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, now, from Irish dancing to Slim World to Liam Moore School of Dance, there's ballet in there, there's jive. There's badminton. There's a knitting club on the Friday morning from 9 to 1. There's Kildare Drama Festival will come in for 2 weeks in the spring. And Brian McGrogan has a gym in the middle of the complex. So it's a busy enough. So hence the reason we wanted to run
I'll talk about that in a second now. Brian McGrogan, by the way, would be well known to Kildare football fans because I know he's been part of fitness management teams there over the years as well. Now, yeah. You're along with all those activities at the CMWS in Kildare Town, you're now going to host a CPR, which I think is
Cardiopulmonary Resuscitation.
And the first aid course coming this month.
It's going to be run over 2 evenings with a qualified instructor coming down to do it. Monday the 13th, we'll deal with totally CPR and the defibrillator. That's one evening. It'll be about three and a half hours delivery. It won't be chalk and talk. It'll be a lot of activity involved to get people up to speed on how to deal with heart attacks, choke and stroke, and stroke symptoms. So that could be the first evening. The second evening then will deal with first aid, casualty assessment, emergencies, wounds and bleeding, seizures, asthma, diabetic emergencies, and all things related to basic first aid. It goes without saying that in the case of an emergency, 999 is called and the professionals are sent for. But the idea of this course is to give somebody or people that's interested in doing it the basics in delivering immediate first aid.
Yeah, it's very important. Even as important as the general first aid is that you're outlining there, the whole area of CPR and how to do it, how to basically pump someone's chest if they have a coronary.
Absolutely.
One never knows, Jim Brady, where one might be confronted with that situation and could save a person's life.
Absolutely. With any emergency, Glenn, with any emergency. So the more people in the community basic first aid, the better. Now, there is a very good defibrillator group separate to ourselves, and they're on call across the town, and they do brilliant work.
Well, look, it's a great idea, and I know that on Kildare Today a couple of years ago, I used to play a song by Vinnie Jones. I can't find it at the moment, and it was done to one of the BG hits. And if Owen the Boy Wonder is listening to me out there, he might find the Vinnie Jones song, which is the BG hits, which is done to the rhythm of how to give person CPR, the cardiopulmonary resuscitation. But if you'd like to get involved in your round Kildare Town, and whether you're Catholic, pagan, Buddhist,
makes no difference.
Kildare CYMS.
Absolutely, and the course is free. We have slots taken, but there's a couple left. The number to ring is 087-261-5157. It's adults only, and we have a couple of slots. So if anyone wants ring or text that number, we'll put their name down. It's a commitment for that's all it is, 2 evenings.
Okay.
But you go away with lots of knowledge in relation to what's associated with.
Jim, we're going to have to leave it there because of
a shout out for our caretaker Jason Dial, who keeps the hall absolutely pristine. So hats off to Jason, and thanks for all your support, Jason.
All right, and thanks to you, and Jim, and well done, everyone, at CYMS. It's on the evening of the 13th and 15th, two evenings. You'll get the basics of CPR and first aid, and it's really a useful life-saving skill to learn. 087-261-5157. What are you doing here now?
Well, I heard you talking about the Bee Gees, and any time the Clem starts talking about music, the hairs stand up on the back of my neck. What were you shouting about the Bee Gees?
I was saying that Vinnie Jones, there's a song that Vinnie Jones recorded.
Staying Alive.
Staying Alive.
Yeah.
Yeah, you might find a card number for me there and do something useful, will you?
Right. Can you not find it yourself? No, Staying Alive.
I put in Vinnie enough. Jones, but it didn't pop up. All right. Okay, so that's Jim Brady anyway. And I want to go now to another local group. They're in Rathangan, where Paddy O'Byrne is hosting a free creative writing class at Rathangan Community Library. Good afternoon, Paddy.
Hi, Clem. How are you?
I'm very good. And how's yourself good. There?
Not a bother at all, thanks.
All right, tell me, what's going on? What's happening there?
Clem, I've been involved in creative writing for probably up to 30 years or more in County Kildare. And as a participant in classes that were tutored and paid for, and I've been self-published, and I've been on media, and I've been around. I've facilitated adult education in Clain, particularly in creative writing as well. So it's always been there for me. And just recently, I spotted an advertisement for a creative writing class, and to me, it was quite expensive. And therefore, I thought, you know, how accessible is that really to something that maybe should be available to more people and more accessible and even free? So I had a brief meeting with Jennifer, local librarian in Rathangan. She has a wonderful amenity there, beautiful working space at the rear of the library, can facilitate possibly up to 30, 35 people. And best of all, the facility is free to use.
And when is this going to happen?
Starting on next Saturday the 4th, from 2 o'clock until 4 o'clock. I already have a number of, interested parties, people who want to come and participate. There is no registration. It's an open door. You can come, have a taste of it. It's suitable really for starters and for people who maybe have any inkling towards creative writing, want to write a memoir, want to write a short story, have a good yarn to tell, whatever. If it's, in my mind, if it's there to facilitate people who have even an inkling of an interest and who might want to take it further, and what's maybe stopping them is access if they have to travel to a class, or access if it's maybe financial.
Or maybe, Paddy, O'Byrne, what might stop people is saying, oh, I could never do that.
Exactly. Well, that's a big putting your toe in the water moment, isn't it? But there are no inhibitions here. This is a case of come with what you have. It will be freely accepted. It doesn't matter what genre, what type of writing you want to do, whether it's short story, poetry, writing for stage, radio. I will be there to guide and to give tips, and all done totally confidentially.
Okay.
So,
And free. And do you know what, Paddy O'Byrne, I might send our own programme director, Paul Power, good resident of Rathangan, along there to the library in Rathangan next Saturday afternoon between 2 and 4. And it's for everybody. Lads, there's not a lot free in this life.
There's no height restriction on it.
And I have to say, the ability to just write down your thoughts, whatever they might be.
Absolutely.
You don't have to think of winning the Nobel Prize or anything like that. I think it's a wonderful opportunity, and fair play to you, Paddy O'Byrne, for providing your services free in that. Next Saturday, Rathangan Community Library, you can give them a ring if you want to know any more, but just turn up at 2 o'clock on Saturday and you'd be very welcome. How about that, Paddy?
Clem, will I leave you with a little piece?
Yes, please.
This is titled Survival, and it's a nature-based piece. Survival. The snail is homeless, evicted, exposed in the world, on my driveway. His home is beaten to pulp, exquisite glass flakes scattered. For a moment, I'd consider taking him in for the night. Before I can, though, she takes him dangling to a certain death. Her well-fed young will thrive. There you go.
Well, I think, Paddy, that's enough to encourage people to go along and avail of your expertise and your generosity in regards to that Rathangan Library next Saturday afternoon. Paddy O'Brien. Tafalt Road, Paddy Agaslan Tommel. And all very welcome. They are Saturday afternoon between 2 and 4. Right, you found the cart for me, did you?
Yeah, you just give me a task and I'll do it, no problem.
Right, okay. But first of all, I want to call in Hannah again there because we have good news today. Energy, so you're going to cover this item in the morning, by the way, about these nursing homes.
Yeah, so we have Eilish O'Regan confirmed from the Irish Independent. She broke the story today, and then we've been in touch with Tadhg Daly to try and get the reaction of the nursing homes. So just waiting on confirmation from him, and we'll be following up on it again tomorrow.
I'm sure
they'll
be delighted about this in the influx of business that they'll get in regards to that.
Yeah.
That's all clear today, tomorrow morning. Okay, we'll have the song in just a minute. But first of all, Hannah, energy suppliers are set to cut electricity gas charges. A number of them from today, nearly 2 million customers are to benefit from the cuts and in prices and standing charges. So let's hear, because the government will also be giving us our little pop-up funding from December. So tell us a little more, Hannah.
Electric Ireland customers will see the cost of their electricity drop by 10% and gas by 12%. So standing charges will also reduce, which will result in saving €212 each year on electricity and €216 on gas. So SSE Electricity is also cutting prices for hundreds of thousands of domestic customers by 12% for electricity and 10% for gas. Meanwhile, Prepay Power's 180,000 domestic customers will benefit from decreases of 12.8% and 13.5% on electricity and gas charges, respectively.
And they're not the only ones, because other major suppliers are also going to move on prices in the coming days.
Yeah, so Flowgas will cut its domestic electricity and gas prices on the 6th of November by 30%, leading to savings of €900 for its electricity customers and €780 for gas customers. Bord Gáis Energy will also cut rates to its 600,000 customers on 9th of November. So both electricity and gas charges will drop by 15.5% on that day, giving annual savings of €274 to gas customers and €357 to electricity customers.
And they're not the only ones, because previously a number of companies had announced reductions. Energia, for example.
Yeah, so those on the company's smart meter plans will see unit rates cut by 20%, which is equivalent to a €357 reduction a year on the average annual bill. And then dual fuel electricity and gas rates will also fall by 20%. So this will translate into an average saving of €682 a year based on the average annual bill. And standard electricity rates will drop by 15%, leading to a saving of €305 a year based on the average annual bill. Gas unit rates are to be cut by 20%, with the average annual bill set to decrease by €325. And then these reductions will kick in from October 3rd.
All right. Now, all the major companies, and of course, we know what the prices went through the roof, and there have been reductions of up to 61% in overall prices. But the cost to us as consumers hasn't come down as quickly. So hopefully this is the start of it. But they're still going to remain a little bit higher. And on the good news, we have some government grants coming our way.
Yeah, we do. So
that one, they've agreed to a €150 each grant, payment dates for energy credits and extra welfare payments, which were included in the cost of living package. And these lump sum welfare payments will start to be paid on the week beginning Monday, the 20th of November. Tell me about some of the welfare payments.
Yeah, so these will include the €400 working family payment, the €400 disability support grant, and the €300 fuel allowance top up. So this will support 409,000 households with the heating of their homes during the winter period.
Right. Now, on the weekend of 27th of November, there'll be the €400 carer support grant, the €200 support for people on the living alone allowance, and €100 qualified child benefit will be paid. And what about the week commencing 4th of December, Hannah?
So on the 4th of December, there will be a 100% Christmas bonus, which will support 1.33 million pensioners, carers, people with disabilities and other welfare groups. The double child benefit payment of €280 per child will also be issued on that week.
And the goodies aren't finished, even though Christmas might be gone, because towards the end of January, there's going to be a double payment.
Yeah, so a double payment for pensioners and those who receive weekly welfare payments. The overall cost of the 9 welfare payments is more than 1.2 billion euro.
Okay, wow, the goodies are all coming. We're all going to be so well off. Thanks, Hannah Kelly, with all of that. And this is Vinnie Jones in How to Give CPR. Here we go.
My name is Vinnie Jones, and I'm going to teach you a lesson you'll never forget. There are times in life when being tough comes in handy. Say some geezer collapses in front of you. What do you do? We need a volunteer that ain't breathing. Here's one I made earlier. First thing you do is you check him over. If he ain't responsive or he ain't breathing, or he's making noises like this, then his heart'll stop working, he's having a cardiac arrest. Look lively. First call 999. Then you do hands-only CPR and no kissing. You only kiss your missus on the lips. Watch. Lock your fingers together, knuckles up. Then push down, right on the sovereign. Push down 5 or 6 centimetres. That's about 2 inches in old money. Push hard and fast, about 2 times a second. Like to the beat of staying alive. Worried alert him? Better a cracked rib than him kicking the bucket. Keep this up till the ambulance arrives. So don't forget, check him over. Call 999, push hard and fast and staying alive. It works. Hands only CPR. It ain't as hard as it looks.
Former Wimbledon and England footballer Vinnie Jones there. Well, you'd need CPR if you met Jimmy.